So if you live in the USA, do you ever wake up in the morning and think to yourself, maybe I just don't want to live in the world's so-called greatest country anymore? It's not that you hate it. It's that you've realized being number one doesn't feel that different from being chronically ill. And that's the thing about the United States. It's like living inside a motivational poster that's been hanging in the break room for 50 years. It's obviously deteriorating, but nonetheless, it's still somehow telling you to dream big. Though at this point, it seems the only dream anyone has left is to stop mistaking survival for a personality. As George Carlin once famously said, it's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. And I find it interesting that you can't really point to a single event that broke it. There was no single meteor strike. It was just a slow motion collapse, a national burnout stretched out over decades. Kind of like an empire that just keeps hitting the snooze button on its own downfall. And every day, you scroll through the news and you think, is this satire or just Wednesday? Because it's getting very difficult to tell anymore. But then you realize in the USA, that's really the same thing. Because we've somehow managed to merge absurdism and capitalism into a single system, one that sells you cosmic dread in a 12-ounce can and calls it an energy drink. Now, I don't know about you, but lately I've started having these intrusive thoughts, I guess. It's not just me, of course. There's a lot of chatter out there about leaving the country. And later on in this video, I want to get into the deeper factors behind this. But for now, what if I just left? Not that I have the privilege to, by the way, but what if? What if I went somewhere a little more sane? To a country that isn't using my tax dollars to bully the rest of the world and that doesn't feel like it's constantly trying to sell me a new identity and a new mental illness to treat with a new subscription plan. And no, it's not that I think life would be magically better somewhere else. I'm not suffering from any grass is greener delusions here. I'm well aware that no place on planet Earth is exempt from corruption and, various degrees of hardship. It's just, I'm genuinely curious what it would be like to live in a country where the default mood isn't a growing underlying sense of dread and disillusionment. That's if such a place even exists, of course. Because here, every moment feels like you're sprinting towards a finish line that just keeps moving further away, and someone's live streaming it and capitalizing on your suffering. But instead, you just keep plodding onward as your health and your hope dissipates. You ever notice how Americans talk about freedom like it's a product? It's safe to say that we've commodified the word to the point where it's basically a brand now. Freedom TM, now proudly manufactured in China, shipped to Walmart, and sold with a side of self-delusion and willful ignorance. So the American dream used to mean owning a home, right? Now, it just means owning some hope, which is, of course, much cheaper, but still somehow more exhausting. And we live in the so-called richest nation on earth, and yet, somehow, half the country can't afford to see a dentist. And we spend billions of dollars convincing ourselves that we're happy. And then billions more recovering from it. It's an empire built on pharmaceuticals and cognitive dissonance. I read once that civilizations tend to collapse not when they run out of money, but when they run out of meaning. And that's pretty much where we are. The money's still flowing, sure. It's just flowing upward. But the meaning part, well, that's evaporated. And we replaced it with marketing, and we turned identity into a logo. Then we took community and citizenship, and we turned them into a subscription model and basically a customer loyalty program. And somewhere in all that noise, all the hustle and the hashtags and the self-help podcasts, something went silent inside of us. Something that used to whisper, maybe life doesn't have to feel this hard. But that whisper's been basically drowned out by all the constant notifications, the debt collections, the omnipotent advertising, and not to mention the sound of your neighbor's Amazon package hitting the porch for the third time that day. So, yeah. Sometimes I think about leaving. And it's not in some dramatic, I'm moving to Bali kind of way. Just in a pensively desperate way that you fantasize about, like, walking out of your own life mid-scene before you have to deliver the same tired line for the millionth time. And you don't even hate the role. You're just done pretending that the plot still matters. You know what I find funny is every country has its propaganda, right? But here in the U.S., we turned ours into a lifestyle brand. And the reason is that the American dream, it wasn't just an idea. It was our most successful export. It sold better than Coca-Cola, Christianity, and democracy combined. The old adage, work hard, play by the rules, and you'll make it. That was the pitch. A very simple, but nonetheless intoxicating story. But like most great marketing campaigns, it was built on selective storytelling. A little truth sprinkled in over a mountain of bullshit. Because what it really meant was, You work hard for someone else, enriching their profits, play by their rules, and maybe you'll get just enough comfort to not question why you're struggling and miserable. The American dream, it's kind of like a pyramid scheme run by dead presidents. The people at the top sell hope to the people at the bottom, who then sell that hope to the next generation. And by the time you realize it's a scam, you've already named your kid Chase and taken out a 30-year mortgage on despair. And we're all raised to believe that success equals happiness. We hear this constantly. And that failure is an unforgivable moral flaw. And if you're struggling, well, that's because you just didn't want it bad enough. As if poverty is a personality trait. The truth is, the dream was never about everyone succeeding. It was about making everyone believe they could. Just long enough to keep them working. You know, to keep them chronically indentured to the system. The U.S. has become like a giant casino. It's the place on the world stage where you go to take your shot at hitting it big. And, of course, everybody thinks they're going to win. But they don't. Because most just gamble. They gamble it all and lose. And, sure, there's a few winners once in a while. Just enough to keep the rest of us thinking that we too are going to be big-ass winners, to quote Charles Bukowski. And you see this everywhere now. If you listen carefully, you can hear in the background this low hum of collective exhaustion. It's and it's basically exhaustion disguised as motivation. And we try to put this toxically positive spin on it and call it hustle culture, which is just corporate capitalism's way of saying, sorry, we ran out of jobs, but here's an identity for you instead. Now, everywhere you look, people are trying to turn their hobbies into side hustles, and their side hustles into some sort of brand. So, we've made survival look like a lifestyle choice. I mean, I know people who can't go on a walk without feeling guilty that they're not monetizing it somehow. As if by not turning your relaxation into passive income, you're doing life wrong. That's the convoluted genius of American capitalism. It convinced us that everything should have a return on investment, even our joy and our pain. And the older I get, the more I realize the U.S. doesn't actually care what you do as long as you're doing something. And it's usually something you don't like or even something downright soul crushing. Because you got to hustle constantly. You got to keep moving, keep buying, posting, performing, planning, strategizing, investing, and on and on and on. Because the moment you stop, well, the illusion starts to crack. And, you know, we can't have that. Not here. So that's why rest feels rebellious here. Because stillness exposes how hollow it all is. The moment you sit down and breathe, you realize you're not really living in a country. You're living in a commercial that just never ends. And, you know, we were told this was the land of opportunity. And it might be, but only if your opportunity happens to align with what the market values this decade. But if your dream doesn't make anyone else money, then for the most part, all you've really accomplished is inventing poverty with extra steps. Sometimes I think the American dream didn't actually die. It just got massively outsourced. It's alive and well in whatever country that we exploit next. We build factories in other nations, promise them a better life, and call it progress. And meanwhile, back home, we can't even afford the products they make. Does that make sense? So, yeah, maybe the leaving the U.S. isn't just about geography. It's about getting out of a mindset that's been baked into us since birth. It's this belief that life's all about competition and hierarchy, that rest is laziness, and that if you're not constantly achieving and constantly strategizing for the future, you're basically decomposing. But still, for all its chaos and contradictions, this place is hard to quit. Because every now and then, you catch a glimpse of what the dream could have been. Those rare moments of decency, creativity, and real human connection that somehow survived between the cracks. It's kind of like watching the embers of a fire. You're still seeing some light, even though the flame burned out some time ago. You know, George Orwell warned us that totalitarianism would come with boots and whips. But de Tocqueville was closer to the truth. He said, one day people would willingly trade their freedom for comfort and live as, and I quote, a flock of timid and industrious animals. Well, sounds like he was correct, because here we are. The not-so-United States, land of the fee, home of the broke. And I don't think it's a stretch to say we've built a nation where freedom basically means you can pick any flavor of a cage that you want. There's the mortgage cage, a student loan cage, a corporate cage with subpar benefits and dental, and there's a gig economy cage with none of the above. Take your pick. They all come with Wi-Fi these days. And everywhere you look, people are exhausted. They're overworked at jobs they dislike if they have a job. And yet, still somehow they're convinced that they're lucky to be here. Because We've been effectively brainwashed to lick the boot of the system. And that's the magic trick of the American American corporate capitalism. It doesn't actually need to oppress you anymore. It just convinces you to oppress yourself. So you wake up at 5 or 6 a.m. or whenever, drink your overpriced coffee, and scroll motivational quotes on social media presented by the elite trying to sell you another productivity app. You know, we don't really live in an economy anymore. We live in a subscription plan. For example, you don't own your home or your car, and now you don't even own your data. You just rent everything until you die. So basically, it's feudalism with customer service. And bad customer service at that. You've got your new royalty, the tech billionaires, who basically control what you see and what you buy and increasingly what you believe. And, well, the crowns have just been replaced with hoodies and baseball caps or whatever. And we're the peasants, of course, who generate the content and the outrage with an endless river of clicks. It's the equivalent of tilling the digital soil while they harvest the attention. So Neil Postman once said that we wouldn't need Big Brother to enslave us because we'd distract ourselves to death. And that's what we're doing. We're voluntarily plugged in, paying monthly for the privilege of being emotionally drained. And meanwhile, the political system pretends to give us a choice, but it's like being asked whether you want to drown in Pepsi or Coke. Two brands, same outcome. And so, we've turned democracy into a customer survey. Just click here to feel like you have a say. And I think maybe the saddest part here is it works. Because we're so conditioned to choose something that will choose illusion over nothing and hope over truth. Eric Fromm once said that most people fear freedom because it comes with responsibility. And he was right, because real freedom is terrifying. Once you see how fake it all is, you can't unsee it. You can't go back to pretending the game is fair. That ship has sailed. And the shittiest part is that you start to realize not only are you trapped in the system's trapped inside of you. I call it the AOS, or the American operating system. Constant productivity and dissatisfaction, and the belief that if you just try harder, it'll somehow all make sense. But it won't, because it's not supposed to. It was never designed to be fair. It was designed to be profitable. So when I say I've thought about leaving the U.S., it's not because I hate the country. It's because I'm starting to truly hate the software that it runs on. And I'm not sure you can debug that by voting or manifesting or buying a van and moving to the desert or whatever. I think it's going to take something more, something a lot more. So maybe you can't leave it all. And maybe the only real exit is psychological. All right, so there's this moment that happens in every American's life, usually sometime around your third cup of coffee and your, fifth nervous breakdown. It's when you realize not only are you tired because you need sleep, you're tired because everything here just feels like work. And most of it is bullshit work, as discussed in David Graeber's excellent book, Bullshit Jobs, which I've mentioned numerous times before. Existing in the U.S. is like having a low-grade fever that never breaks. It's not necessarily deadly, but it wears you down until you start confusing exhaustion for identity. And we call this the grind. We glorify it. We turn burnout into a badge of honor. But more accurately, it's just national fatigue with a motivational quote slapped on it. So the average American spends their life like a phone left on 5% battery. Constantly dimming the screen, closing background apps, praying they make it to Friday without crashing. And somehow we treat all of this as normal. Like we've all agreed that being permanently anxious is just part of being a responsible adult. And it's not economic, it's cultural. The whole country runs on debt and performance anxiety, and then we wash it all down with a steady stream of SSRIs. We perform our happiness the way actors perform a role they secretly despise, but they can't really afford to quit. And social media made it worse, obviously. And now, you're not only performing for your boss or your family, you're performing for everyone all the time. Every post, every caption, every just a quick update, it's just another audition to prove that you're still functioning in a system that's really just quietly killing you. So we've reached the point where people take digital detoxes like it's a form of rehab. You leave the internet for 48 hours. You try to sit in silence. And then you realize your brain has been running on advertisements and cortisol for 10 years straight. David Foster Wallace once said, "The truth will set you free, but not until it's finished with you." And I think that's what's happening here. We're finally waking up to the truth of what we built, and it's not freedom. It's exhaustion dressed up as progress. We're told technology would save us time, but it just ended up pushing us to fill every single second with digital distraction. And we're told that social media would connect us all, but it just made us lonelier in high definition. And we're told that we're supposedly the luckiest people on earth, but you know, you look at the U.S., everyone's medicated, overstimulated, everyone's discreetly Googling how to disappear without faking my death. And you can feel the cultural burnout in everyday life and how people talk to each other, or more accurately, at each other. Everyone is so overstimulated, it's like we've forgotten how to listen. Not that most of us are good listeners to begin with. I mean, I've noticed that most conversations don't feel like exchanges anymore. They feel more like competing monologues waiting for a pause long enough to reload. So we've monetized outrage, and basically we've gamified empathy and turned our trauma into a career path. You can literally become an influencer now by documenting your breakdown. And if it goes viral, well, you might even get sponsored by a meditation app or something. That's possibly the most American sentence I've ever said. I think there's something deeply dystopian about a culture that sells you the poison and then charges you extra for the antidote. You hate your job? Well, try this mindfulness subscription for $9.99 a month. Feeling lonely and can't afford therapy? Well, we've got apps for that. Just swipe until you find someone equally detached and buy a weighted blanket in the meantime. It'll help you feel like you're being held. And that's the thing. The U.S. doesn't actually solve problems anymore. It just creates and commodifies them. So we're not fixing the sickness. We just brand it, and we turn every wound into a niche market. And underneath it all, there's this faint collective awareness that something's off. That deep down, we all know this isn't sustainable. And ultimately, that we've built a civilization that's running on the fumes of memes and antidepressants. But nobody wants to say it out loud, because that would mean admitting that the system isn't broken. It's working exactly as it was designed to. And that's the real horror. That maybe the problem isn't that we lost our way. It's that this was the way all along. This is a culture that's built on speed and competition and, of course, constant stimulation. And now we can't slow down without feeling like we're dying. Because if we stop moving, we have to sit with ourselves. And that's the one thing Americans are truly terrified of. Stillness and silence. Conditions which might force us into some kind of self-awareness. Conditions that leave us with nothing to distract us from the fact that we're alive and that we have no idea why. So, at some point, every American who's even mildly self-aware has Googled best countries to move to if I want to escape. You start out curious and maybe even a little hopeful. Portugal looks nice. Japan seems stable. Costa Rica has Pura Vida. Mexico isn't very far. And for a brief shining moment, you imagine yourself there, eating fresh fruit and working from a laptop in the sunshine, removed from and relieved of the sense of doom in the U.S. You picture yourself finally free, like the credits are rolling and you finally got out before the building collapsed. Lucky you. But then reality creeps in, because leaving the U.S. isn't just about changing your address. It's about exorcising a ghost that follows you no matter where you go. The American mind. The one that's always scanning for productivity and optimization, even in paradise. So you move to Bali to find inner peace. And then 2 weeks later, you're arguing with the coconut vendor about the Wi-Fi speed. Not only do we export culture, we export burnout. It's a kind of cultural contagion. Now, not everyone, but a good number of North American digital nomads sipping a $9 smoothie in Medellin or Lisbon is a walking embodiment of the problem they thought they were escaping. And the irony is kind of brutal, because we flee our hyper-consumerist culture only to end up gentrifying the places that still had a soul. Now, most of us aren't premeditating this, of course, but it does reveal how complicated and convoluted the situation really is. It's not a simple matter to pack up and move to another country without there being some repercussions. The rent goes up, and eventually the locals get priced out. And suddenly your simpler life depends on someone else's economic displacement. So, congratulations, I guess. You've become the colonizer of calm. And yet, there's still something understandable about wanting to leave. This isn't really about running away. It's about trying to live in a place that doesn't constantly remind you that life is a rigged transaction. I think the urge to leave the U.S., it isn't just political or economic. It's also metaphysical. It's a yearning for quiet. Not necessarily silence, but peace in a way that you just can't attain in the USA. To wake up and not feel like you're in a competition you never signed up for, and to be surrounded by people who seem to have mastered the art of enough. For example, in Italy, people typically take 2-hour lunches. In Denmark, they bike to and from work. In Japan, there's still a sense, however fragile, of social harmony. Meanwhile, in the U.S., people eat lunch in their cars like fugitives from their own lives. That's if you even get a lunch break. But here's the catch. Leaving doesn't erase who you are. If you were restless and anxious and overstimulated in Los Angeles, you'll probably be these things in Lisbon, just with nicer architecture. Because as the old saying goes, wherever you go, there you are. So I think the real test isn't whether you can leave the U.S. It's whether you can unlearn it. You have to unlearn the guilt of slowing down and the compulsion to measure your worth in output. And you have to dispel the paranoia that rest somehow equals failure. You got to detox from the myth of more. And that's hard because America bakes more into your DNA. So there's this line by Chris Hedges that hits this perfectly. America has become a society where all that matters is success, defined by the accumulation of wealth and power. And when that becomes the only measure, all else withers away. And you can see it. It's in our relationships, our politics, it's everywhere. Everything has been converted into currency. Even happiness has become a product category. So when someone leaves, it's not just an act of relocation, it's an act of rebellion. It's a refusal to keep pretending that this level of madness is normal. Still, there are trade-offs. I mean, let's be honest. Every country has its shadows. You know, you might move somewhere cheaper and safer, allegedly more peaceful, but you might also feel like an outsider forever. You're never really going to belong there. I've heard people discuss this who moved to Japan, for example. So you might gain tranquility, but then lose the ability to blend in. And maybe you'll save some money, but in the process, you lose community. Or worse, you might become part of the very gentrification that's eroding the authenticity you came for. So, North Americans have a habit of romanticizing simpler cultures while slowly sanitizing them with their presence. And just a few yoga retreats later, the local vibe becomes an Airbnb brand. The soul gets paved over by wellness tourism. And then, one day, you realize the irony. You didn't truly leave the U.S. You just brought it with you in a more comfortable disguise. Now, at the end of all this, I think the question isn't really, should I stay or should I leave? It's, what part of me am I trying to escape from and why exactly? Because I think the truth is that America isn't just a place. It's a psychological habitat. It's a way of thinking that lives rent-free in your head long after you've canceled your USL plan. It's the part of you that checks email on vacation and then apologizes for resting. It's also the part that can't just be without immediately asking, so what's next? The U.S. is the ghost of ambition whispering that you could always be doing better even when you're happy. Especially when you're happy. And we talk about leaving America like it's a border crossing, but it's really more like a spiritual detox. And that's because you don't just leave the country, you have to leave the conditioning too. You can't buy your way out of it. You can only outgrow it. And that takes time and dedication. And the irony is, even the people who escape often end up creating their own little Americas wherever they go. You know, Wi-Fi, the credit cards, DoorDash, and, you know, the existential dread included. We build our little prisons out of comfort, and then we call it freedom. And maybe that's why some people stay. They don't love the system. They've just realized that geography doesn't fix psychology. You know, you can move halfway across the planet and still be haunted by your own expectations. Or you can stay exactly where you are and start dismantling the machine from the inside. Discreetly, subversively. You know, one small act of noncompliance at a time. You stop chasing status or buying what doesn't feed your soul. You stop mistaking exhaustion for purpose. And maybe, slowly, you start to remember what life actually feels like. Maybe you stop measuring it in GDPs and start measuring it in moments and laughter. In long walks that don't have to actually lead anywhere. There's a story I love by Henry David Thoreau, where he moves to Walden Pond to live deliberately. And people think he was escaping society. But he wasn't. And what he was doing was experimenting with a new definition of it. And he was still close enough to walk to town, so it wasn't as if he was entirely rejecting civilization. He just stopped letting it dictate the terms of his existence. And I think that's what leaving the U.S. can mean. Even if you never go anywhere. It's a refusal to live by the metrics of madness. Like a quiet rebellion against the religion of productivity. So it's not really about borders or passports or taxes and so forth. It's about the radical act of being content. Because the thing is, no empire collapses gracefully. And this one, the empire of noise, of endless hustle, spiritual debt, illusion, it's no exception. You can't save it, but you can save yourself from it. So maybe the question isn't to stay or to leave, but how awake can I be while I'm here? How much self-awareness and emotional intelligence can I develop? If you can live in this country with all its chaos and its cruelty and contradictions and dysfunction, and still manage to create pockets of peace, art, truth, and love, then maybe you've already left it in all the ways that matter. And if you can't, well, then leave. If you have the privilege to do so, because most of us don't. Try to find somewhere that reminds you what it means to be human. Just don't expect it to save you, because wherever you go, you bring yourself with you. And in the end, that's really the only border that ever really mattered anyway. All right. That's all I've got today. As always, thanks for listening.